Let's see, what is it we're studying this morning? Revelation. John's got some worksheets. If you didn't get your hands on one, he's got some. This, if you were here for our study in Daniel, Deidre needs one, John. If you were here for our study on Daniel, we used Stafford North's material for that, and it went very well. And so when I announced I was going to be doing Revelation, somebody said, are you going to use Stafford's material for that too? And I said, well, I don't know. Let me take a look at it. So I got online, looked at it. It's great. Why reinvent the wheel? So, and I've been an admirer of his work for decades. I don't know if you are familiar with Dr. Stafford North, with his association from Oklahoma Christian, but he's done a great work, a great scholar. He has a way of bringing out complicated points that are and making them very easy to understand. So Lord willing, we will follow through with his material this morning in studying the Revelation. But first, I got a scenario and a question to ask you. What's it mean to knock it out of the park? Well, where's that phrase come from? It's a reference to baseball, and if you know anything about baseball, you know that means a home run. But what if you're talking to somebody, let's say they came from Outer Mongolia, and they know nothing about the Western world, nothing about baseball, and you're talking to them and say, boy, he really knocked it out of the park. And they would say, perhaps, what park? And how did they knock it out? And then you say, oh, it's a reference to baseball. And he would say, oh, what's baseball? So this guy was playing baseball. So, well, no, he wasn't playing baseball. He just did something really well. And so we say he knocked it out of the park. And they say, well, what's that got to do with baseball? Well, it has nothing to do with baseball. You could imagine trying to explain this. But to people who know what the phrase means, you don't have to explain anything. You just lay it out there and everybody, oh, yeah, sure, knock it out of the park. That means he did really well. Well, we understand that. But somebody who doesn't have that background won't understand that. What if I was telling this person about a friend of mine who tried to be a comedian, but he bombed? And it's, there was an explosion? What happened? Is he okay? No. It's an expression that means he just didn't do very well. Then why do you say he bombed? I don't understand this connection between, see, but to you, when I say he bombed, you have the background and the wherewithal to say, oh yeah, he didn't do very well. When you look at the Revelation, we're looking at symbols and figures. And if we don't understand those symbols and figures, we'll go, what in the world is this all about? And we'll think, wow, a third of the part of the stars, this is going to be something that impacts the entire physical universe. And you go, no. It's something different. And until we understand the imagery that is used in the Revelation, we'll have a difficult time understanding the Revelation. So as we go through this class, we'll be looking at a lot of that imagery. By the way, you can do this on your own study of the Revelation. When you see an image, look for references that might be in the margins to the Old Testament prophets, because almost all of the imagery used in the Revelation was used at some point in the Old Testament, and you can go back to that context, and whatever it meant there, that's pretty much what it means in the Revelation too. And that's one of the keys to unlocking the meaning of the Revelation. So that's just a little bit of an intro to get us started on what we'll be looking for. All right, got your worksheet? Let's look at the five most common views about the Revelation, and there may be some new ones now that I don't know about, but here are the most common ones. Number one, A, destruction of Jerusalem. Some folks think Revelation's about the destruction of Jerusalem. And it's like a lot of things in the Bible, depending on how you look at it. This fits. Well, you ever put on a garment and part of it fits, but the other part doesn't? Just because part of it fits doesn't mean it fits. The whole thing has to fit. And so when you look at the Revelation and somebody points, oh yeah, this looks like the destruction of Jerusalem. What's the rest of it look like, though? Does it all look like the destruction of Jerusalem? And if it doesn't, then it's not a good fit. B, fall of Rome. The fall of Rome. 1B is fall of Rome. So we're looking at the destruction of Jerusalem in the first one, the fall of Rome in the second one. C, prediction of religious and political history. Predictions of religious and political history. In other words, it's looking down the road, and people are still thinking Revelation's looking down the road to what's coming up. I remember talking to a friend of mine years ago, and we were in a time of political turmoil. This is about 40 years ago. We haven't had any turmoil since then. But he said, oh, I've been reading Revelation. See how that big eagle's getting ready to swoop down on us? And I didn't ask him. He was one of those guys, you know, don't ask. But he had this idea that there's a big eagle going to swoop down on us, and it's from the Revelation. So, no, that's not, and it's not, well, D. 1D for dog, philosophical principles. That's how some people look at the Revelation. These are just philosophical principles to live by. And E, events around, perhaps the most popular one. Can you fill in those blanks? End of the world. Events around the end of the world. Now, one way to pretty much get a handle on the fact that it's not that is, what did Jesus say about the end of the world? He said he didn't know when it was, the angels didn't know, God alone knew when the end of the world was, and he did not give us any signs towards looking for that. And if Jesus is going to say, I don't know when it is, the angels don't know, only God knows, that is so much to say, stop trying to figure this out. He would not then, at the end of his new covenant, New Testament writing, give us a book, oh, this is all about the end of the world. No, it wouldn't work like that. He doesn't do that kind of thing, so. Besides, it wouldn't make any sense to the people who first got it. Nobody would have read this in the first century and said, oh, this is for 2,000 years from now. Because those people think it's all about them. Or they will when they're born. Number two, five keys to understanding the book of the Revelation are, number one, or number A, Revelation is written in symbols. Symbols or signs. As a matter of fact, when you read in the first chapter of the Revelation, the English word we use is signified, things which were signified. What's the first four letters of signified? Signs. So signified. And that's exactly what the Revelation is. It's an interesting observation we make with the English word, that the signs and signified come out in the rest of the book, in the balance of the book. All right, 2A, written in symbols, and under that is a Roman numeral, or not a Roman numeral, like, yeah, it is Roman numeral. What type of literature is Revelation? It is apocalyptic. Apocalyptic. Now, here's something about that word, apocalyptic. If you see a movie being advertised and it's saying this is a movie about the apocalypse, what are they saying about the movie? This is a movie about something that happens at the end of the world, and all of civilization's wiped out, and there's just a few people left, and they're killing zombies with crossbows. It's apocalyptic. No, that's a misapplication or a misunderstanding of the word apocalyptic. The word apocalypse is from two Greek words, apo, meaning from, and another word that means cover or concealment. So from concealment. In other words, that's why it's called a revelation, because with a revelation you're revealing something. And so this is writing that is taking away from concealment things that God wants his people to know. They understood the imagery. They knew what this was all about, better so than we would, because we don't have the same background they had. We probably should, but we don't have it as well. So that's what apocalyptic means. Away from cover. It's being revealed. It's the revelation. It's not being put in mystery. That's the idea. Number two, in most books of the Bible, we take most of what is said to be blank with some figurative speech occasionally. Literal. You take it literally at the outset, unless there's a reason to do otherwise. Oh, yeah, it really does. And this is for most of us guys, not so much the girls. But if something breaks and you decide, well, I'm going to fix this thing, and you start to tear into it to fix it, what normally happens? Do you make it better or worse? If you don't know what you're doing, you usually make it worse. I've told this story before. I'll tell you again because you may not remember it, and it's a really important story. I had a little car. It was a great little car. It was a Honda Civic. And it would fly like the wind until it quit. Anyway, I looked at the windshield one day, and there was a screw. The way they had made it, they had put a screw through the bottom of the windshield, and I had part of the cover off, and I could see that screw, and I thought, well, that thing looks loose. I know, yes. She's shaking her head, no. And I'll fix that. I took a screwdriver, and I just snugged. I didn't bear it. I just snugged it a little bit, and what happened? Crack right there started, and it took it a while, but it kept creeping up the windshield. So it's like, Marty, don't be an idiot. If you don't know what you're doing, leave it alone. Find somebody who does. I wouldn't do this, but if I had taken it to the Honda shop and pointed it at the guy, that would have said, oh no, don't leave that alone, that's the way it's supposed to be, it's torqued special value, leave it alone, and everything would have been fine. So this is the same thing. If we can't figure it out on ourselves, on our own, then find somebody who has some clues and then double-check their work to make sure what they're saying agrees with everything else, because it's all got to agree. The Bible is organic in the sense that all parts have to agree with the whole. So that's where we are on this. Roman numeral 3 under 2, as we read or hear statements, we take them to be literal unless they say something that is obviously not literal, in which case we look for a blank meaning, a figurative meaning. You could put symbolic, it's much the same. So it represents something. It doesn't mean that. It's like when you say, my friend who was trying to be a comedian bombed. We know that doesn't mean a literal explosion. It's a figure that means something. What does it mean? Roman numeral 4. The Holy Spirit used this method for his message in Revelation because he wanted to blank it to some, but blank it from others. Reveal it to some, and then hide it from others. So that's why he used apocalyptic literature. B, under 2B, Revelation is written primarily about events that will blank come to pass. And then he gives you scripture references there. Chapter 1, verse 1, chapter 1, verse 3, 3:11, 2:22:6. Shortly come to pass. And here's something, I like to make this point. If you look at chapter 1, verse 1, says, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show to his bondservants, the things which must, what? Soon take place. Now, does that sound like a figure? Doesn't sound like a figure to me. It looks like that's a literal statement, easy to understand, very clear. John? Roman numeral 2. Oh, the second blank is figurative. There's a third blank? Let me read through this. In most books of the Bible, we take most of what is to be said literally, with some figurative speech occasionally. In Revelation, on the other hand, we take most to be figurative. Remember Stafford, if you were in the Daniel class, he likes to repeat things. He repeats ideas. Same thing. It's like he's hammering home that idea of figurative, figurative, figurative. All right, Revelation 1:1, things which must soon take place. And then verse 3, chapter 1, verse 3, blessed is he who reads, and those who hear the words of the prophecy, and heed the things which are written in it. For what? The time is near. Does that sound figurative? It does not sound figurative. It sounds very literal. Then you go to chapter 22. Da-da-da-da. Should have put a marker there. Verse 6, and he said to me, these words are faithful and true, and the Lord, the God of the spirits of the prophets, sent his angel to show to his bondservants the things, what's it say? Which must soon take place. Does that sound figurative or literal? It sounds figurative. I mean, literal. Just checking you out there. Just seeing if you're paying attention. And then he says this, verse 10. He said to me, do not seal up the words of the prophecy of this book, for the time is near. So how many times have we been told, shortly to come to pass, soon to take place, time is near? And these are very clear statements that I believe we are to take literally, not figuratively. Now he says, seal it up. Daniel was also told to seal up what he was given. At the end of Daniel, you read that. Seal these things up because the time for their fulfillment is not close. And if you were talking in Daniel about the next four empires, including the Roman Empire, well, that took place within 600 years, easily, of what Daniel had said. So the Roman Empire came within 600 years and the kingdom was fulfilled, or brought into existence, just like God told Daniel in Daniel. So that was to be sealed up, and it took place within 600 years. And John is saying, don't seal these words up, because the time's at hand, the time is near. So when people are pointing you to the Revelation and saying, this is all about what's going to happen here in 19, or it's not 19 anymore, is it? In 20, whatever. No, I don't think so. Because the clear language of the Revelation says these were things to take place then. All right. Moving on with our worksheet. C, 2C. Revelation was given to blank persecuted Christians. And if you look at 1:9, 2:13, 6:9, you get a clue. So look at 1:9. It says, I, John, your brother and fellow partaker in the tribulation. Wait a minute. In the what? Tribulation. Now, what do you hear about the tribulation? I've heard over and over and over again, oh, it's coming. There's a great tribulation coming. John says, I was in that tribulation. I'm a fellow partaker. In other words, the saints were partaking in the tribulation as well. He's talking about persecution. When you read 1 Peter, First Peter was all about bearing up under persecution, the whole letter, from start to finish. Second Peter was about false prophets and bearing up under false prophets. So the church was under a lot of pressure from false teaching and persecution. And this letter or this revelation is written through John. And John, where was he, according to verse 9? He was on the island of Patmos. I thought about, I've got some pictures of Patmos. Maybe I'll bring those later and show. But Patmos is just kind of a rocky island in the Mediterranean, and there's not much to see. It's not like if I showed you a picture of Shiloh. Wow, Shiloh. I'll show you some pictures of Shiloh as we study Judges, Lord willing. Or even Jerusalem, because it's, and they don't know where he was. There are all these traditions about this is where John was, and he was in this cave here. We think, maybe, perhaps, somebody made this up in the 11th century, and so we're going with that. Well, nobody knows, but it was Patmos. He was sent there, exiled. We don't want you Christians around anymore, and so we're going to stick you on this island out in the middle of nowhere. And there's some speculation as to whether or not that might be where he was when he wrote this. Other people say, oh, no, he wrote it somewhere else, and he just sent it around when he was on Patmos. Nobody knows about those details. But the bottom line is, this is a time of persecution. He's off on Patmos, and he says, this is because of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. In other words, if I wasn't testifying about Jesus, they wouldn't have put me here. That testimony is still what the world hates. We're seeing that a lot in our political situation in this world today. If you stand up for what is right, according to what the Bible says, you're going to get smacked around. This world does not like that. That should not surprise us. It's always been that way. It'll always be that way until the Lord comes back. But when the Lord comes back, whoo, boy, I want to be with him. Okay, back to the worksheet. C was revelation was given to comfort persecuted Christians. Did I even say that? Okay, well, I have now. It's given to comfort persecuted Christians. And if you want to get another reference to that, you can look at 2 Corinthians chapter 1, where Paul's writing to the church at Corinth, talking about God being the God of all comfort and how he comforts those in their distress. D, for dog, revelation identifies the key characters in its drama. The dragon, now, oh, wow, we're all the way up to chapter 12. The dragon represents Satan. Satan. And he even says that. Chapter 12, I like it when it says it right out. And the great dragon, this is chapter 12, verse 9, the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil, and Satan, who deceives the whole world. That's pretty clear. Don't have to worry too much about whether or not that one's accurate or not. That's the dragon is the devil. The first beast represents the Roman Empire. The first beast represents the Roman Empire. Now let's talk about some details regarding that beast. Number one, so we're under D, and then under D, we're under Roman numeral 2, and under Roman numeral 2, we're on number 1. The beast has blank heads and blank horns. 7 heads, 10 horns. Do you remember another beast like that? From Daniel, chapter 7. Same one. Daniel was talking about, I don't know that Daniel knew it, but it was a foretelling of the Roman Empire that would come, the great and terrible beast. 7 heads, 10 horns, and so is like the blank beast in Daniel 7. Fourth beast. You could put terrible beast if you want. Either one of those will get it. Representing a coming world empire. Number two, the blank gave the beast great blank. And this is from chapter 13, Verse 2. The dragon gave the beast great, and it doesn't say it just like that. It's worded a little differently, but the idea is that the dragon is what gives Rome its power, gave the beast its power. Number 3. The beast blanked God. And there's your reference, chapter 13, verse 6. The beast blasphemed God. What's it mean to blaspheme? When you speak against someone disrespectfully in order to hurt them or to harm them, that's blasphemy. In other words, they have a high position and you mock that position, that's blasphemy. And you really only can do this with regard to deity, to God himself. We can say bad things about one another, but we're really not blaspheming one another because we're not in a high enough position to be blasphemed for that to be applied to us. But God can be blasphemed, and that's what the devil is doing through the beast. Number 4, the beast made blank against the blank. And that's the reference is wrong there. It says 17, but it's actually verse 7. The beast made blank war against the saints. Made war against the saints. You see that also in chapter 12. And I know we're moving away from the order of the worksheet, but there's a woman in chapter 12 who's standing, well, chapter 12, verse 1. A great sign appeared in heaven. Not a small sign or an insignificant sign, but a great sign appeared in heaven. A woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet and on her head a crown of 12 stars. So what? What are we seeing? A woman. What's she clothed with? The sun, the radiance of the sun. What's she standing on? The moon. Any of that literal? These are all figures. She was with child. What's that make you think of? That ought to make you think of Jesus. She cried out, being in labor and pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head were 7 diadems. His tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven. Ooh, and threw them into the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, what would he do? Devour her child. The imagery. And we're not talking about a single point in time. We're talking about something that covers quite a large period of time. But you get the imagery of the devil through the Roman Empire trying to wipe out Christianity, Christ himself and Christianity. Who put Jesus to death? Peter said it, Acts chapter 2. You with wicked hands. In other words, talking to the Jews, he said, you guys killed Jesus, but you did it through the Romans. And that's what we're seeing here. This woman gives birth to the child, and the dragon wants to eat that child. And when you get farther down in Revelation, he pursues the woman trying to destroy her, but he can't. So look what he does. In verse 17, so the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. Hard to mistake who those are. That's the same thing we're talking about with this response, that he makes war with the saints in chapter 13. And that's one of the things that Jesus does through John. He keeps repeating these ideas in different symbols and figures, so that we get a similar message over and over again. That way it makes it more clear. The conflict. Conflict is between God and the devil initially, but now it's between the devil and God's children. That's what this book is about, written to comfort the saints. This God knows about this. He sees it's happening. You get to the end, who wins? Well, obviously God does, and so do the saints. Number 5, the beast rules over all people. He's shown to rule over all people, all nations, tribes, and tongues. which is interesting because later when we get a view of heaven, we're going to see all nations, tribes, and tongues represented among the saints. So the gospel goes out to the whole world. The dragon persecutes the preaching of the gospel and the church and the saints, but the gospel still reaches into the hearts of men and saves us for eternity. Number six, the beast's seven heads represent seven blanks and seven blanks. Seven kings, but also seven hills. What is the meaning of seven hills? Rome was built on seven hills. See, if you know that, and people would have known that in the day, it's like a no-brainer. Oh, seven kings. Well, let's count the kings, the emperors that Rome has had. Seven hills too? Yeah, okay. Interesting. See, it's being revealed. He didn't write it to hide it from us. He wrote it to reveal it to us. It's just revealed in symbols. Just like if I want to reveal to you that my friend who was a comedian didn't do very well, I'll say they bombed. And you go, what? No, you know the meaning of bombed. Just like when somebody says, I heard a sermon the other day and that preacher really stepped on my toes. And that guy from Mongolia will go, that's not right for a Christian to step on people's toes. And he's a preacher too. Well, no. You know the imagery, you get the message. Okay, number six still, the beast's seven heads represent seven hills and seven kings. Of these seven kings of the beast, blank are past, one is, and one is coming. Five are past, one is, and one is coming. So the beast was in existence at the time Revelation was written. The beast also had some connection with seven hills. Now, Stafford's not here for he and I to discuss this, but we'll come back to this idea because when John writes, the beast who was and is not and will be, that makes me think, all right, he's writing this during a time when the emperor is not at this present point persecuting the church. The beast was, but he's not, but he will be. Who are the two greatest emperors as far as persecution goes? Nero and Domitian. And so that gives us a clue as to when the revelation may have been written. And none of this is hard and fast, and different ideas take root, but I think there are some things that will help us understand when it was written. We'll get to that later. Number three, the second beast represents the blank of Emperor Blank. And this is the cult of emperor worship. And if you want to make note, you may already know this, not every emperor persecuted the church. Some emperors, that's a waste of time. Not every emperor wanted to be worshipped as a god. Some of them had sense. Now, if you're looking at our political situation and you're thinking, how in the world do these people ascend to these high positions? These people are nuts. Read the history of Rome. I know their situation was a little bit different, but and what did God say in Daniel? I rule over the kingdoms of men, and I put over it the most base of men. It's as if God is, I'm going to show you who's really in charge here. And he's been doing it ever since. Number three. This is under D, Roman numeral 3. The second beast represents the cult of emperor worship. And then under that number 1, the second beast has blank horns like a blank. And this is from chapter that's supposed to be. Supposed to be 13:11. I haven't corrected all the mistakes, but if you look at 13:11, it says, "He performs." Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. So formulate in your mind this picture of a lamb. By the way, is there another lamb in the Revelation? Duh, it's Jesus. And that's one of the things you see throughout the Revelation. Everything, not everything, but so many of the things that God has, the devil has a counterfeit. You see, we just read about the woman clothed with the sun, feet standing on the moon, ready to give birth to that woman. Well, then you're going to read about the devil's woman. She's a prostitute riding on a great beast, drunk on the blood of the saints. Everything God puts out, the devil puts out a counterfeit. The second beast has two horns like a lamb. He is on the side of the dragon. Everybody got that? Two, the second beast seeks to make everybody to blank the first beast. And that is worship the first beast. That is the heads. In other words, he's clarifying the heads of the first beast, because the heads are the kings. So the second, there's two beasts. The first beast is the Roman Empire, Roman government. The second beast is the persecuting power of the Roman Empire, trying to force everybody to worship the kings, the heads of the first beast. Is that all clear as mud? What's what?
Two.
The second beast seeks to make everybody to worship the first beast. And then the clarification is, that is the heads of the first beast. Because the beast has how many heads? Seven heads? Ten horns? The lamb has got two horns. Three is the heads of the first beast represent emperors of the blank empire, Roman Empire. So the second beast promotes worship of the Roman emperors. See, we're doing, seeing the same thing over and over. He's reiterating. The first beast is the Roman Empire, but there's a separate beast. It's connected to the first. The second beast is the persecuting power of the Roman Empire. Two separate entities. Because the first beast doesn't always persecute, but sometimes the beast rises, the second beast rises to force that, and they're forcing people to worship the kings, the emperors. Number four, to do this, the second beast sets up images of those emperors, which is, it's a figure that the beast is doing it, but there literally were images of the emperors, and you had to bow down to that image of the emperor and offer sacrifice to it. Number five, so the second beast with two horns like a blank, like a lamb, represents the blank of emperor worship, the cult of emperor worship. That's number five. The second beast with two horns like a lamb represents the cult of emperor worship. E, Revelation reveals the prostitute as the blank of blank, the city of Rome. Roman numeral 1 under that, the great prostitute represents a great city that rules over the kings of the earth. When Rome would conquer a nation, they would subjugate that nation, give it a ruler just like they did in Israel. And the kings of Rome ruled over the kings of the earth. Number two, she rides on the back of the blank with blank heads. beast with seven heads and 10 horns. She holds in her hand a blank, a cup, which is filled with the blood of the saints. Our brothers and sisters were being put to death. Number four, Roman numeral four. She is dressed in blank and blank, purple and scarlet clothes, and wears beautiful jewels. An ancient city to which she is compared is 17:5, Babylon. Let's hurry through this last one. The view that best fits what Revelation says about itself is that the blank blank will persecute Christians, Roman Empire will persecute Christians, and God will eventually bring it to defeat. The Roman view fits that the Revelation was written in blank symbols, because the symbols agree with Rome. The Roman view fits the concept of the stories happening soon, because Rome was right there. The Roman view fits the idea that Christians were soon to be persecuted, because Rome persecuted Christians. The Roman view fits the idea that the dragon is Satan, and the second beast represents the cult of emperor worship. I know we're going fast, but Chris has rung two bells. Christian, that is. E, the last one, the Roman view fits with the ideas that the prostitute represents the blank of blank, city of Rome. Anybody got anything? All right.